Hello, Market Watcher. I'm David Revell, and this is the weekend edition of Value Side. Coming up, let's put that on hold. At least that seems to be the approach by Evergrande in China. Then our daily recap, all that just ahead. Well, let's put that on hold. That seems to be the way the financial markets looked at things this week, and the way that Evergrande and China seem to approach their problems. We began the week with the realization that Evergrande, at one time the world's most valuable real estate firm, Evergrande, might default on a total of $120 million in bond payments that they had coming due this week. And that would surely bring the markets down, went the thinking on Wall Street. But surprise, surprise, Evergrande did not make all of the payments, and in the end, the financial markets were able to hold steady. How this all unfolded was a pure act of legerdemain. First, Evergrande raised the curtain around its interest payments on the yuan-denominated bond. Yes, they said, we've reached an agreement with the Chinese bondholders, but how much, or just when paid, all the questions were never answered by Evergrande. Next came the interest payment due on the offshore bonds. No payment made here either, and no notification of when a payment might be made. But surprise, surprise, Evergrande pulled a rabbit out of the hat. It turned out that a 30-day grace period has now been activated on those bonds, which means that Evergrande has 30 days before the bond payment really has to be made. Until then, Evergrande is still not in default. Bottom line, this is an issue that's not going away. All that happened this week was Evergrande, and by proxy, China, was able to kick this can down the road and gain another month. Now, overall, markets swooned on Monday, but slowly came back to close just about even on Friday, except for NASDAQ. All the other averages finished slightly higher for the week, NASDAQ only slightly lower. So let's take a step back and listen to just how this week unfolded. Now the fatigue really sets in. For thousands of Chinese who occupied Evergrande offices around the nation, and for the Evergrande executives themselves who are trapped inside. Except for one woman who attempted suicide, it has been a peaceful demonstration. A demonstration that expressed the frustration of many Chinese towards the company that they used to trust with their life savings. In China, you see, it is real estate more than any other investment, where people like to put their wealth. And Evergrande Real Estate Group is where an estimated 1.5 million Chinese have their accounts. And the story of how the Chinese people put their faith in Evergrande is really the story of Evergrande's corporate success. In the beginning, Evergrande simply collected deposits for future apartments that they were building. It didn't take Evergrande too long, however, to realize that this entire process was a cash cow, providing unrestricted funds, which I believe were later used to collateralize additional loans. How else do you account for the extraordinary $300 billion in total leverage by Evergrande? But that's just my speculation. We'll find out much more about that as the story unfolds. In any event, by their latest estimate, Fortune estimates that Evergrande was the world's 122nd largest firm by revenue, placing Evergrande ahead of such well-known financial companies as Charles Schwab, Barclays Bank, Credit Suisse, and Bank of New York Mellon. Heady company indeed. And it's entirely appropriate that we should compare Evergrande with the world's financial institutions. That's just what Evergrande evolved into. A couple of years ago, Evergrande created a wealth asset management program, equivalent to our mutual funds, a program which allowed Chinese investors a vehicle to place additional funds with Evergrande, funds which could earn a return and later be redeemed. And herein lies an additional scandal. While announcing to the public that all redemptions on this wealth asset management program were halted, six senior executives secretly cashed out their own accounts. The company has indicated that the six will be forced to return the funds and face, quote, severe penalties. But when this news hit, it was like putting gasoline on a fire. Understandably, Evergreen's investors were outraged, and that's when the sit-ins began. While the demonstrators could not get their money back, they could at least demonstrate their frustration. So here's where we stand. In just 12 hours, Wednesday's workday will begin in China. This will begin three of the most significant days in the history of this country. By my estimate, those two bank loans by Evergrande will come due. The exact amounts of the loan have not yet been released, but I believe that it is absolutely imperative that Chinese authorities make these loans whole. Unfortunately, I think the lessons from the American financial crisis of 2008 apply here. The central bank must attack this with open wallet. A money-no-object approach that recognizes that this is an existential crisis for the Chinese financial system. The objective has to be to keep commerce and finance operational. So bottom line to the Chinese authority, pay the loan. That bides us time to go to the next crisis, and as luck would have it, the next crisis comes tomorrow. As unbelievably as that may be, on Thursday, China's tomorrow, two interest payments are due on two Evergrande bonds. Total payment is 120 million U.S. And again, I say to the Chinese authorities, reach down deep and come up with this payment. Right now, you're just talking about millions. Shortly, you'll be talking of billions. Remember, the total leverage at Evergrande is $300 billion. What must be prevented at all cost is a complete bank run. The moment when the Chinese people lose all faith in the financial system and want their money back. That would be catastrophic and must be avoided. Remember, we are just at the opening act of what promises to be a very long drama. My best guess is that this will continue for months. The best advice for the Chinese? Don't give up. Continue to work through the crisis. It's the only way to save your financial system. Well, Asia saw a very rocky start to the week last night, as Hong Kong was down more than 3%. This, as tensions are really beginning to climb over whether one of the largest real estate firms around, Evergrande, will be able to meet its debt payments due Thursday. As you know, I feel that Evergrande Real Estate Group will be the catalyst for all of this. Back in 2018, Evergrande was the most valuable real estate company in the world when its stock at a price of over $30 a share. Today, Evergrande is trading for less than $3 per share, a 90% decline in less than 3 years. But it is this week that the impending drama will really begin to play out. It was all supposed to begin today when the first of several interest payments by Evergrande was due, but a two-day Chinese holiday looks like it's pushed back those payments until Wednesday. But the real payments are due Thursday. That's when two bond payments will come due. One, a Chinese bond with an interest payment of $36 million, and the second, an offshore bond. I've speculated that it is a Caymanian bond, and it will come with a $83 million interest payment. And absolutely no one believes that Evergrande will be able to pay either of these two obligations. And it's in anticipation of that default that last night the Asian markets began to sink. The selling in Hong Kong encompassed anything that was related to real estate. Henderson Land Development, for instance, suffered one of the most severe sell-offs in the last 12 months, along with other real estate stocks. Selling also included the Hong Kong junk bond market. As you know, Evergrande's bonds are currently rated junk or high interest, the lowest level of bond ratings. What made this all the more remarkable is that the crisis hasn't even begun. It won't begin until Thursday. Yet here we are with markets around the world significantly on the downside. As I'm writing this, a couple of hours before the markets in the U.S. will open, a quick survey shows that the Japanese Nikkei, the German DAX, and the Euro SOX all are down more than 2%. With the futures on the American Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Standard & Poor's 500, and NASDAQ all down more than 1.5% at the moment. And I'm afraid that we're just getting started. Now let me just enter a note. At this point, it is way too early to determine whether this is a major change in market direction. But here on Wall Street, we often like to point to specific events, such as Evergrande, as the cause of this or that market move. But markets move by their own initiative, choosing by themselves when to enter a bull or a bear phase. So do I think that Evergrande is causing all the markets in the world to move down? No, not really. No individual company is so influential that it can move all the financial markets around the globe. But an individual company can be the catalyst. It can represent a moment in time when all the prior excesses of all the financial markets come together. It can be the last straw that pushes over a bull market into a bear. A bear market that was already in the cards, it just needed everyone to see what is going to happen. Thus, Evergrande becomes a metaphor of an over-leveraged, overvalued financial system that is ready for a correction. Only time will tell if that's the case now. And remember, it's not until Thursday that we find out what the Chinese authorities have up their sleeves. The ball is firmly in the CCP's court. They still have the opportunity to save this crisis. Well, last night was like two different stock markets. When we went to bed on the East Coast, it looked like markets were headed back down again. But when we woke up this morning, a big rally had occurred in the overnight futures markets. Obviously, something big had happened. And that something big was that Evergrande, the troubled real estate and financial firm in China, announced that they were going to make that interest rate payment due tomorrow. Wow, what a surprise. As I'm writing this, the Dow futures are up 186 points, and the euphoria on Wall Street is palpable. This is good news all around the financial markets, as this will take a major problem off the table. Not only does that include Wall Street, but the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee concludes their two-day meeting today, and now perhaps Jerome Powell won't have to answer those troubling questions about contagion when he holds his press conference at 2:30 this afternoon. It's all butterflies and rainbows. Well, it sounds too good to be true. And if there's one thing I've learned in my years on the street, it's that if something sounds too good to be true, it usually is. Too good to be true. And the more I read about last night's deal with Evergrande, it became obvious there was much less here than the street believes. First of all, it's important to understand that there are two Evergrande bond payments due tomorrow, one for the locals, denominated in Chinese yuan, and one for the offshore, denominated in U.S. dollars. Only the Chinese bond interest is being paid, not the offshore bond. Now, making matters much worse, there is absolutely no disclosure of exactly how much of the Chinese bond interest will be paid or exactly when. I refer you to more of the specifics here to an excellent article this morning in Zero Hedge. But all we know about this bond interest payment is that apparently an agreement has been reached between Evergrande and its Chinese bondholders on some kind of a payment. And this makes perfect sense to me. Remember, many of those bondholders are the ones who had sequestered Evergreen management in their offices by blocking all the lobby exits at the Evergreen office buildings. So by all means, you want to pay off the demonstrators if you can. But that still leaves the offshore bondholders in limbo. And here again, another Evergrande loophole comes into play. Oh, wow. I sure would like to have the Evergrande lawyers. Anyway, the offshore bond prospectus allows a 30-day grace period for those dollar-denominated bonds before they're considered in default. As I say, good lawyers. So really, this crisis will continue on for another month until that grace period expires. And for another month, bondholders will be on pins and needles, hoping that things turn out. Now, here in the U.S., one of those bondholders includes Larry Fink and the folks over at BlackRock. Reportedly, as recently as August, BlackRock had accumulated $400 million worth of Evergrande bonds. Contagion, anyone? So to sum up, Evergrande has agreed to make an interest payment on one of two bonds due tomorrow, the Chinese yuan-denominated bond. The offshore, U.S. dollar-denominated bond, however, will be put in limbo, a 30-day grace period before we will know if that interest payment will be made. The saga continues. Well, Nike stock is down about 5% in pre-market trading this morning as the company announces that one of its major factories has been closed since mid-July and will likely remain closed for the rest of September and likely into October. But don't worry, no Americans will be idled. Now, if that sounds confusing, it's all just part of the modern American multinational company. Along with Apple Computer, Nike has been the leader in the move by American companies to place their production factories overseas. For Nike, this all began at the very beginning of the firm back in the 1960s, when the company first located its factories in Japan. But by the 1980s, they moved production to China, and that country has remained their largest producer for years. Today, Nike employs nearly 1.2 million workers in 450 factories located in 36 countries around the world. But by far the majority of those factories are located in China, Indonesia, and Vietnam. And one of the big three, Vietnam, has closed its factories because of a government lockdown to prevent the spread of the pandemic. So to answer our earlier point, indeed no Americans are affected, only Vietnamese workers have been laid off so far. Now, in last night's conference call, the task remained for Matthew Friend, Nike's chief financial officer, to announce to the listeners that indeed both Vietnam and Indonesia factories had been taken offline by those respective governments as part of the pandemic lockdown. Combine this with the difficulties in the supply chain, the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach, incidentally, reported more than 70 ships at anchor waiting to offload earlier this week. Now put this all together, and you can see some of the problems that the multinationals are currently experiencing. And it makes one wonder, just how viable is the multinational model anymore? After all, if there's one characteristic of this new millennia, it is disruption. From the international trade disputes, to the pandemic, to natural disasters, and that's to say nothing of the international human rights issues. China, and thereby Apple and Nike, are still embroiled in issues relating to the working conditions for the oppressed Uyghur minority. Put this all together, and you have to wonder if there isn't a better way, a way to shorten supply lines, promote the local economy, and help national employment. Perhaps somebody will come by with that strategy. And that's ValueSide for Friday, September 24. I'm David Revell. Please join me in praying for those left behind in Afghanistan.